Welcome to the Lake Watkin Policy Group. Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Lake Watkin Policy Group. My name is Gene Knutson, and I'm the chair of today's meeting for the Bellingham City Council. First thing we'll do is go around the room and everybody introduce themselves, even people in the audience. We'll start over here.
Mark Gardner, I work for the Bellingham City Council.
Ingrid Entity with Whatcom County Public Works.
Gary Stoiker with Whatcom County Public Works.
Todd Fogelson, City of Bellingham.
Todd Arnold,
Whatcom County Council.
Bruce Ford, Commissioner of Lake Watkin Water and Sewer District.
Larry Branson, Valley Ford.
Justin Cleary, General Manager of Lake Watkin Water and Sewer District.
Randy LaCroix, City of Bellingham.
Kurt Napfeld, City of Bellingham Planning Department.
Steve Sundin, Planning Department, City of Bellingham.
Jason Porter, City of Bellingham, Stormwater Manager.
Cynthia May, City of Bellingham, Outreach for Lake Watkin.
April Barker, City of Bellingham.
Cliff Strong, Water County Planning.
Eli Backwood, City of Bellingham, Natural Resources.
Alan Shulhan, Watershed Advisory Board.
Matt Gossett, City of Bellingham.
Lance Retro,
City of Bellingham, Public Works.
Laura Weiss, People for Lake Watkin.
Tori Tye, PD.
Thank you very much.
One more.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't see you. The poll.
I won't take it personally.
No.
Watershed homeowner.
Okay. And one more introduction.
Carly Deferidge, Resources for Sustainable Communities.
Okay. Thank you very much. First item is Lake Watkin Management Program 2024 Work Plan Process Status Content. Ingrid's going to lead us in that.
I think Claire's
going to
do a quick introduction.
I can do that.
Okay.
Just a second.
I want to interrupt your lunch, Claire.
Thank you.
Should I welcome?
So this is the latest iteration of our five-year work plans. This is, I think, the fourth one. Maybe the fifth one. I'm going all the way back. What we have for you today is a presentation of where we're at in developing the 2020-2024 work plan. We're a little bit ahead of schedule or ahead of the normal timeline that we've established in the last few work plans, in as much as this will be formally presented to the councils in February for approval in March at the joint council meeting. It's a process that we established several times ago, and what it does is allow staff to continue to work on implementation on an annual basis without coming back to the council and having to have that approval process. So the plan, because of that, is fairly general in its scope. It covers a lot of the activities that we've done in the past and that we anticipate doing in the future. And like I said, it's a draft. So what you're going to hear today is where we're at so far.
How's the light for everyone? Is that good? There are still a few, if you want to take home a printed copy of the PowerPoint presentation, there's still a few there. So I'm kind of on behalf of the ICT, which is the Inter-Jurisdictional Coordinating Team. So pretty much city staff, county staff, and water sewer district staff work together on coordinating these Lake Watkin Management program work areas. And we got together in June and started this process. And so my role today is going to kind of run through the presentation and the summary, but for each program area, I believe we have other staff here today that are available to answer more specific questions that come up. So again, the timeline of what we've done so far and where we're going, Claire touched on this, but we met in June and established small staff teams for each of the 10 program areas. So these are the same established program areas that have been in the last few work plans. So the small teams met in July and August and pulled together draft content for activities and performance measures. And we've been working in September to compile that. Myself and Kathy Craver of Whatcom County are kind of taking the lead compiling everything this year. So in general, what these teams did is look at the current five-year work plan as a starting point, identify things that just get rolled over because we're still doing them, we still need to do them, identified things that don't need to be rolled over. They were either completed or something's changed and they don't make sense to keep adding up to the plan. And then we've identified new activities. A lot of those specifically came from required TMDL implementation plan activities, or the TMDL response that we're obligated to do in the next 5 years. So we're here to get your feedback today. Generally, we're going to take November to January to finalize the plan, get it pretty with pictures and such. February, we'll have a plan, completed plan, ready to take it to respective councils and the commission for review. And then, as Claire mentioned, the goal is to formally have it adopted at the March joint councils and commission meetings. So today we're here to give you kind of a high-level summary for each program area, what we're proposing, and in terms of proposed activities and performance measures. And we're here to answer your questions and give any initial feedback that you have. So I'm going to go through each of the program areas. Again, these are kind of high-level summaries. There's a lot more detail that we've compiled that goes in behind this. Things that specifically relate to a required TMDL response activity are noted in yellow and italic. And please note that these, everything is still graphed, but the performance measures in particular, we still have some work to do to modify those and really dial them in. So we're going to go in the standard work plan order. So land preservation is our first program area. This current work plan, or the new five-year work plan, is really going to be a continuation of focus on the city's property, watershed property protection program, where, of course, you have funds to buy properties to put them into protected status, and then there's a lot of work that goes into maintaining and restoring those properties. So that's going to be the focus of this next 5 years. Draft performance measures include number of units, development units removed, if that's applicable, acres acquired or protected, and then something new this year, trying to categorize protected properties in terms of the forest age, so early succession, mid-succession, or mature. So should we stop at each program area or wait till the end?
Why don't you wait till the end?
Okay. So stormwater is the next program area. This is something where we have a lot of activity, a lot of things going on. The summary, again, for the proposal for the next 5 years are activities related to installing infrastructure upgrades. So these, we're talking about stormwater facilities, engineered stormwater facilities designed to remove pollution, phosphorus and fecal coliform bacteria and other pollutants in stormwater runoff entering the lake. So kind of a standard thing, providing annual prioritized capital projects lists. These are the 6-year capital project plans. Of course, constructing new capital projects, retrofitting existing stormwater facilities. As these facilities become older, that's going to be an increased focus to take the older ones and identify ways to improve them and get better efficiencies out of them. And continuing with the homeowner incentive program. In terms of planning for future stormwater improvements, a couple things proposed: developing neighborhood stormwater management plans. So an example would be the county's Geneva Neighborhood Subwatershed Master Plan that they're working on, and then publishing a retrofit plan for upgrading existing stormwater systems. Something that is kind of business as usual but required for our NPDES permit and TMDL response is conducting inspections and maintaining our stormwater facilities. So again, the yellow are things that tie back to the TMDL. Other highlights to the stormwater program, conducting research and quality control. So looking at actually testing and documenting the performance of stormwater treatment systems, looking at trying to actually quantify how good they are at reducing phosphorus and fecal coliform, and characterizing phosphorus reductions from operations and maintenance activities. So an example would be like street sweeping as an example. And then providing watershed-wide technical assistance. So this is the idea of stormwater staff helping other program areas in what they're doing to maximize water quality benefits. So the stormwater performance measures don't have draft in front of them because these are things that are specifically required in the TMDL response, so we will for sure be counting and reporting on them. So that's evaluating and tracking our phosphorus reduction from capital projects, homeowner incentive program projects, land use regulations, and operations and maintenance activities. Okay, moving on to the third program area, land use. Land use is divided into development and forestry as two kind of sub-program areas. So for land use, the next 5 years, primary activities include providing outreach to increase watershed residents' understanding of regulations. The idea there is to increase knowledge and understanding and therefore increase compliance. Continuing collaboration between the city and the county when developing watershed regulations, continuing to track development activities and how much development we have. So an example is the annual build-out report. And then monitoring required mitigation with development. An example is the natural vegetation protection areas. So the forestry component of land use, primary activities are engaging with private landowners to achieve compliance with the landscape plan. And Cliff, that's the DNR landscape plan, correct?
Yes.
Right. Reviewing reports of DNR activities, reviewing private forest practice applications, tracking those private forest practice activities, and I believe this is new this year, collaborating with the DNR to improve mapping of the activities that are happening on DNR. Is that the all DNR land or both public and private?
Well, the issue is when we get the permits, it's hard to tell where they are based on how they don't really map.
So it could be private or public.
Yeah.
Forest practices. Okay. So again, the draft performance measures, and I'm going to try to hit the highlights and not read all of these, but tracking new and developed properties considered phosphorus neutral, measuring increase in watershed residents' knowledge of development regulations. We have a new tool now, the survey that we'll talk more about in the education section, but we're going to use the survey as a tool to actually measure some of these changes in knowledge and behavior and attitudes. Acres of timber harvested and replanted, miles of road constructed and abandoned, so sort of net road length, and acres treated with herbicides. Okay, next work plan area, the monitoring and data. So this first bullet is continuing the work that we do, working with Western Washington University, the Institute for Watershed Studies, continuing to monitor lake water quality, and there's ongoing tributary water quality studies. That data will be used for the models to develop annual water quality reports, which you all see every March, more or less. Something new related to the TMDL is, this is the same, ties back to the same activity in the stormwater section, so actually evaluating and measuring stormwater facilities' effectiveness at removing phosphorus and other pollutants. Improving the load and response model accuracy. So the goal there is to revise the loading capacity as appropriate based on the new models and the new data. Monitoring potential impacts from septic systems and doing a better job at pushing that information out so it's easy to understand. It's some sort of summary of the work that's being done for monitoring and data. Draft performance measures, those same things you already saw, update and calibrate models, revising loading capacity as appropriate, and providing the annual summary. Okay, hazardous materials program area. A lot of these activities tie into required NPDES permit activities and TMDL response. This first bulleted item is removing hazardous waste materials from watershed residents. So that will look like a hazardous waste pickup event, make it easy for people to get rid of toxic chemicals and hazardous waste in their homes. And then the ongoing protection of water quality through our spill prevention and response programs. So that's, you heard the acronym IDD&E. That's what this is talking about. So draft performance measures, looking at pounds of hazardous materials collected, pounds of phosphorus-containing materials collected from household pickup activity, and then tracking numbers of spills, illicit discharges, and incidents reported. So recreation, moving on, the recreation team this year really tried to recalibrate and focus on the nexus between recreational activities and recreational facilities and watershed stewardship. So not just recreation in the watershed, but responsible recreation in the watershed that's not impacting water quality. So some proposed activities for the plan include developing and improving facilities to promote recreation while reducing impacts to water quality, developing and improving trails and park roads to reduce impacts, so dealing with eroding trails and roads, for example, providing low-impact public access opportunities, so give people a low-impact option so they don't just blaze their own trail down to the lake, and providing information on watershed stewardship to recreational users, so example, pick up your dog's poop, things like that. Draft performance measures include the length of user-built trails, again, which tend to be eroding, to how many of those are decommissioned, length of forest roads maintained according to the forest practice staff, number of pet weight stations maintained, number of people using the parks and trails, and number of information, interpretive information, and exhibits installed. Okay, aquatic invasive species, or AIS. The highlights proposed in this next plan include preventing, so standard stuff we do to prevent AIS from entering the lake, like the watercraft inspection program and providing information about the need to get your watercraft inspected. Detecting AIS early and monitoring, so sending people out to look for aquatic invasive species and responding to that. Responding would be developing a rapid response plan. And something new, this idea to develop a voluntary AIS monitoring program. And Teagan, bless her heart, provided pictures. So draft performance measures, I believe these are similar to the current plan. Number of new introductions, number of watercraft inspected and decontaminated, number of people doing their online aquatic invasive species training, and number of visitors at these check stations. Okay, just a few more. Utilities and transportation. So again, this work plan area focuses on conserving water and limiting impacts from transportation and utilities on water quality. So continuing to manage our water systems to minimize water quality and quantity impacts. Reducing water quality problems from sewer and septic systems, promoting alternative transportation, designing transportation systems to protect water quality. I believe that would be an example if we're already doing a road project, you're incorporating water quality protections. Is that right? Justin's nodding. Yes. Examining opportunities to improve bike and pedestrian mobility, and then related, working with WTA to at least maintain and hopefully promote and bus use and bus routes. So I'm not going to read all of these guys, but lots of draft performance measures for utilities and transportation, again, related to promoting bike and pedestrian facilities, again, linking back to the survey questions where we might be able to measure people's understanding or behavior change related to water conservation. Might be able to measure people who are using alternative modes of transportation, looking at, and then some numbers, looking at estimated gallons of water conserved, number of sewer overflows, and then corrective actions, on-site sewer failures, and then also corrective, looking at both the positive there, and number of new sewer connections, getting people off the septic. Okay, the education and engagement section is one that always has a lot of overlap. So we acknowledge that there's over some of the other program areas have specific activities that are education and engagement specific, and those will be copied over to this section of the plan as well, so they'll be listed twice in the plan. So an example would be the hazardous material waste, like a pickup day, that will be listed in the hazardous materials section and also the education and engagement sections. We also have a few activities that are just specific to Lake Whatcom education and engagement. So those are producing a new Lake Whatcom stewardship guide. That's already well underway, and the goal is to get that out in early 2020. You'll note a lot of these are in yellow, so they're linked to the TMDL requirements. Repeating the survey that I've talked about, you probably remember Cynthia talked about the survey was in 2018, right? So a baseline survey that the city worked on establishing, the idea is it's going to be repeated every 5 years. So every work plan will have a survey repeat. And of course, the idea is to use those survey results to inform, program changes for the next work plan and to evaluate how we're doing, using performance measures. Another education and engagement activity, providing private stormwater facility maintenance and outreach. These would be like homeowners associations that are responsible for maintaining the stormwater pond. And then generically supporting all of the outreach, any sort of outreach related activity in the work plan or the other work plan areas. So the draft performance measures, again, tying back to the mailer sent, so how much information is getting sent out, for example, the new watershed guide that will be mailed to all watershed residences next year, looking at visitors to the website, and then trying to use the survey to look at a collection of metrics and trying to gauge overall how is the dial changing in terms of key metrics for watershed stewardship, behavior, knowledge, things like that. Okay, the last program area is administration. So this is just acknowledging all the work that we do for things like meeting coordination, notifying the public, developing work plans and reports. So we did call out here in yellow, there is the need to update the TMDL implementation plan. That's every 5 years, right? So it cycles in to this work plan. Interfacing with regulatory agencies, managing budgets, and securing funding. So performance measures, annual progress reports, work plans, budgets, nothing too exciting. Okay.
Okay, question.
Too long.
Question. Todd, go ahead.
On the performance measures for land use, one of them is acres treated with herbicide on forest lands. So is the idea that you want to see a trend going down? Is there a goal for that performance measure?
That's a good question. I believe it's just to keep the finger on the pulse to see. I mean, ultimately, it would be ideal to have it go down. Someone can correct me. Sorry.
It's just one of the forest practices that we track. So we track, this amount of roads that are being decommissioned and new roads, the use of pesticides, and just the overall how much land is being cut per year. So,
but I'm safe to assume that.
Yeah,
so it's a performance measure, just as acres treated with herbicide. Well, like we'd do more, we'd do better, but it's that's
not. No, it's just something we're tracking. It's DNR's, it's in DNR's responsibility. So we have in the past. Let DNR know how we were concerned about sensitive areas and stuff.
So I guess maybe thinking of it like a dashboard for some of these.
So a lot of these things we have trend data, we have previous years.
Any more questions?
A question with regards to under utilities and transportation, you listed under your draft performance measures about the number of new site sewer system failures, but you haven't listed under those. I would just think you should add the number of new on-site septic systems in the watershed. Would be something to get a handle on.
That's a fair point.
Go ahead, sir. Go ahead.
Thank you. Is the Department of Health and the Department of Ecology an approver or reviewer of the italicized general items?
Approver of what?
Oh, yeah, I don't know specifically.
Yes.
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 An approver and reviewer, or just a reviewer, or just?
So all the items in yellow are obligations under our TMDL implementation plan, and so depending on the item, ecology is both reviewer and approver.
That's a DOE, it's not health.
Anything else under this topic? Okay.
Right. Well, yeah, just
go ahead, Todd.
Yeah, Todd Citron, Lake Walking Waters. For those of you in the county, if you could remind me, several years ago, it was proposed that the septic systems be inspected by the county, and there was a lot of pushback, and then it went, as I understand it, to a self-inspection, and the people who had septic systems would then give some sort of documentation that they had done that. It's clear to us that is a haphazard approach to that problem, that issue, and wondering if there's any discussion about revisiting that policy so that there's more assured and proper inspection of septic systems.
We don't have anybody here from the health department that could address that specifically, and that we could get back to you on that. But I mean, they are required to have their septic systems inspected periodically, depending on the type of system. And most of those are done by professional inspectors, but we do have a program that does allow people to take a course and become certified to do their own inspections.
Yeah.
But they're still required to file the paperwork. So you're saying you would like,
well,
to not allow people to do their own inspections?
It seems like that there's evidence that there are systems falling through the cracks as it now stands. And so, that would be one solution in my mind to fill those cracks, to make sure that there's really a more aggressive or more scheduled inspection system where that's not happening. And I don't know all the details of how it is currently happening, but I know that that was proposed initially, and there was pushback by septic system owners to be able to do it themselves rather than impose that on them.
Again, I can get more details from the health department, but I do know that they also they audit a certain percentage of self-inspections as well, where they go out there and check their work. I don't know what that percentage is, but I can find out.
And we did just kind of revisit this in the last year when we had to deal with the water quality and water quantity stuff with the HERS thing. So, we went through this discussion kind of comes and goes about, can we just get by with self-inspections? How do we audit it? What's the failure rate of people's professional inspections versus self-reported stuff? I know we just kind of did all that in the last year, but there was no consensus about getting rid of the voluntary self-inspections. But we did have more discussion about audits.
Go ahead, Lauren.
Question related to monitoring the data. There are certain constituents we've been monitoring for over the years. My understanding is that we haven't tested for hydrocarbons in quite a while, maybe 10 years or so. And since we just talked about herbicides, pesticides, my understanding is we're not testing for any of those that are being known to be used in the watershed. So I guess my question is there any discussion about adding certain constituents to our list of monitoring things we're monitoring for?
We've talked about it in the past. The city has talked about adding it to our monitoring regime. Pesticides, cosmetics, those kinds of constituents are very hard to monitor for, and it's hard to assign a source to them. You might get a positive, but understanding where it's coming from would be difficult to determine. You can determine categories of sources, but you can't put your finger on a household or a forest practice that is responsible for any one plume.
Wouldn't that be the same for phosphorus? When you test phosphorus in the lake, you don't know exactly what's coming from, so
Well, it's, yeah, we're providing, it's similar to that, and but with phosphorus, at least we are, our models model which watersheds are contributing how much phosphorus. We don't have that kind of model set up for the pesticide or the cosmetic.
And the hydrocarbon?
Hey, pardon?
The hydrocarbons, like
I don't know. We haven't had a discussion about that for several years.
Okay. Anybody else? One more before we go on to the next item. Go ahead.
I have a question, or a comment. Actually, there's a new member on the Watershed Advisory Board who is trying to get familiar with what we look at. And the work plans are something that is a good thing to look at, to learn. And he brought up a comment on there's these categories, and then there's measures, performance measures, but is there ever any, he said, what's an A look like? You know, as far as measuring a category, you know, report back all the measures, but what's our goal on each one of these? I just thought that was a pretty pertinent new way of looking at these work plans.
That's a good point. Good comment. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, thank you, Ingrid. We'll now go to the second item, which is land use. And Kurt and Steve, you want to come up to the front there?
Do you need to plug in, Kurt?
I don't, no.
It's not very electric. You can be there right now.
Zero carbon. Good afternoon. We're just going to provide just a very brief update on the Lake Whatcom Watershed Development Regulations within the city. As many of you probably know, these development regulations were initially adopted back in 2000, and then in 2009 we actually did a major overhaul of the development standards, and then in 2017 we actually did a minor tweak with some other citywide low-impact development code changes. We believe that the code is working, the 2009 and current version that we're working with is working well, appears to be doing what we had hoped it to be doing, but we do believe that there are places where we can make it better, specifically clarifying definitions and adding some definitions in our codes to be more consistent with other definitions throughout the Bellingham Municipal Code. We also need to include our HIP projects into the overall review process and how that works, because the HIP program came after our 2009 adoption of these codes. So we'd like to be able to clarify that. We're also thinking about allowing minor land disturbing activities during the seasonal restrictions. We found that there are small projects that can be done and not pose any sort of risk from a phosphorus perspective. So allowing some of these minor land disturbing activities to occur during the winter months is a good idea.
What would be an example?
A fence post. Right now, you can't dig a fence post. If you have, we've had issues where pets and things like that are getting out, and our code at this point says, nope, you can't dig that fence post to fix that problem. So we believe that there's ways to ensure that we don't have any stormwater issues while allowing some of those to occur.
Just to clarify, in the county, it's a square footage maximum. It's different in the city?
It's different in the city, correct.
Yep.
We also want to look at the thresholds for redevelopment. We've got several different thresholds. There's actually a small area that you can go ahead and do an addition onto your home that actually doesn't trip redevelopment standards. And so we're wanting to probably focus that down a little bit more and refine those thresholds as to when you have to redevelop or retrofit your properties, whether it's a complete parcel retrofit. That's what we're looking to go towards. We've also want to clarify some subdivision regulations and just exactly what can and can't happen when it comes to resubdividing your land in the watershed. So overall, as I mentioned, we think that it's working pretty good. This is more of just a kind of a cleanup, making sure that it's consistent with our other codes and then clarifying the intent, especially after we've been instituting it for a while. We intend to start this program probably in the beginning of 2020, and then working through that, we'll be taking it to the advisory board for some input, and then on to the Planning Commission and City Council for final approval in 2020. That's the time frame. Kim Wheel, who I'm sure many of you know, will be leading that. She's off on vacation right now, so stepping in for her on that. Happy to answer any questions that you may have with just the standard development regulations.
Land use is a real popular topic here. Okay, we'll go on to the next item. Steve, Shoreline Master Plan.
For those of you who don't know me, I'm Steve Sundin. I work in the planning department. I'm the city's shoreline administrator. We have a shoreline master program update that's due at the end of June in 2020. We've scoped much of the project with DOE already, so we feel like we have a lot of the things that we need to change or work on or revise for the SMP set. We'll be preparing something a little bit more formal to take to council later in the year. As it relates directly to the lake, because of the what's also referred to at least internally as the Silver Beach Ordinance, because of that rule, we actually don't see any big changes that need to be made for the rules for the shorelines for Lake Whatcom. We have a 100-foot buffer that's in place. Many of the homes are non-conforming. They are well within that buffer, so that does restrict the encroachment that they can do, at least as far as towards the lake is concerned. And our rules are set up so that if any additions or redevelopments occur when the Silver Beach Ordinance kicks in and the native vegetation protection requirements apply, the shoreline program is specific in that those types of, those NDPAs shall be placed within required buffer areas. So that's all really working pretty well. The shoreline program, I think, has helped in terms of having some hardened shoreline that's been removed. We've had about 450 or 500 feet of hardened shoreline on several different properties that have been removed and restored into actual beach area. That's hard to find. So that's part of our success. The thing that we might take a little bit more time of looking at is the nonconformity element. A lot of times people want to put, what we see oftentimes is people want to put a cover over their deck. Those sorts of minor encroachments that are already over areas that are already developed or disturbed. And we have crushed more than a few dreams in terms of those minor additions, and so we might want to make way for some of those, knowing that the Silver Beach Ordinance would handle some of the different ways that impervious surface is defined in terms of redevelopment. Those things are all working. I think one of the things that we're going to look at more specifically is that the buffers for Bloedel Donovan Park are fairly extreme. They're 200 feet, and a lot of times we're running into small additions or structures that the Parks Department is wanting to install, and they're forced to locate these things that should otherwise be located fairly close to the shoreline, like boat storage and those kinds of things. When you think about Bloedel, that park area is a recreational use. There has been some stormwater improvements and treatments that have been installed, but that first 50, 100 feet of shoreline is not necessarily providing any buffer function because it's not very well vegetated. A lot of it's grass and that kind of thing. So we want to create just a little bit more flexibility there for those things, knowing that they'll have to comply with the Silver Beach Ordinance to get those things done. Bulkheads, buffers, reuse, non-conforming NDPAs. Yeah, so to summarize, we don't anticipate there being any big substantive changes. We feel like the Silver Beach Ordinance is really kind of carrying the water in terms of regulating what people can do. So, any questions about any of that?
Okay, thank you. Now we'll go.
I'm here for the county.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Same thing. So our council just approved our scope of work last month. So we and our consultants are busily trying to work on these issues. There's two pages of things included in the public scope, and you guys can go to our project website if you want the whole document. I thought I'd just kind of highlight a few ones that might be of more interest to the Lake Whatcom Policy Group and or things that are kind of new. In general, we think our shoreline plan works pretty well, except that the layout of it is really wonky. There's too much stuff in it. So we're trying to simplify it, pulling all the policies out, put in our comp plan, and just codify the regulations. Kind of some of the policy things we'll be dealing with is climate change and sea level rise, adding and or strengthening some of the things in there. Strengthening the policies and the regulations on ecological connectivity and wildlife corridors. Looking at our non-conforming rules that differ quite a bit in the shoreline than our land use codes, to try to rectify those things. Looking at, as for overwater structures, piers and things like that, especially for single-family residential piers, right now it's very prescriptive, which gets some docks and piers into more sensitive areas, so we're looking at trying to have some performance standards and some flexibility in those so that we can kind of steer them away from where we think they shouldn't be. Let's see. As you all know, Council's working on some new policies and regulations for Cherry Point, so incorporating those, whatever they end up being. The same with sand and gravel extraction in some of our rivers. We currently don't have any standards for liveaboard in marinas, so looking at developing some regulations for that. And then for Lake Whatcom specifically, including some language and policies about the importance of Lake Whatcom as a source of drinking water. So, like I said, right now we're working on drafting all this stuff. We're planning on going back out with some open houses in January to the public to present what we've come up with. Probably the Planning Commission in February, Marches, and County Council in April and May, again to be adopted by June 30th.
Okay. Any questions for Justin?
Cliff,
I'm sorry. I wrote your name down. Okay. Thanks very much, Cliff. Now we'll go back. Matt, you're next.
Matt.
You want to come up here and just introduce yourself and so.
Okay, so
I'm
Matt Quarton. Matt's our new acquisition manager for the city. So he's the person that's going to be buying all the property out there.
So historically speaking, the watershed acquisition program has negotiated with dozens of private property owners, acquiring approximately 2,200 acres at a cost of about $32 million. So presently, we have we're negotiating with several property owners for approximately 130 acres. And please forgive me, I don't want to ruin our negotiations, so I'm going to pretty much have to leave it at that. A bit of our past, our present, like I said, we've got several property owners we're dealing with, about 130 acres right now that we hope to close by the end of 2019. The future looks pretty good. We get calls every couple times a week, hey, does the city want to buy my property? That happens all the time. So the acquisition program looks pretty good going forward. We get calls from private property owners, from brokers, other entities, for large tracts, for small tracts. It really just depends. We get everything. Any questions?
Any questions for Matt? Go ahead.
Hi. I'm just curious. Why is there so much traffic or interest from the public to see the city or wants to purchase their property?
Exactly, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes we wonder that too.
Yeah.
So it really kind of depends, you know. Some people, I think, recently we had someone inherited a piece, and they didn't really know what to do with it. So they knew that the watershed program was out there. They gave us a ring, and we were lucky enough to close on that. So it could be a number of different things. Maybe the property is not developable, and they're paying taxes on it. Or, gosh, it could be, I wish I had like one thing for you, but it's really a host of different reasons.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Matt.
You bet. In the
go
maintenance,
ahead.
In the maintenance part of this equation, we've been doing the same things we've been doing for years, taking care of hazard trees, planting plants, connecting trails where that's called for. I might point out in the program area is you have land preservation and you have recreation. Land preservation, our primary goal is to protect water quality, with a secondary goal of providing recreational opportunities when it makes sense. The recreation side of that equation sort of has a flip of those two goals, and whereas the recreation, they're providing mostly the county, they're providing recreation as a primary goal, but a close second is they're also providing that recreation in a way that protects water quality, and you saw that in the slides of how they're working on that. So we work closely with the county. And when we do, it's combining those two goals within the project that we're working on. So,
okay. Yeah. Go ahead.
You said that to date the city spent $32 million.
That's approximately, yes. That's correct.
What's the projection for, let's say, the next 5 years on our budget for more of that acquisition? Do you have a number for that?
I'm going to say approximately $5 million over the next 5 years to acquire property in the watershed.
Okay, so not very much.
Actually, you'd be surprised. Actually, we can kind of scoop up little properties here and there for not that much. I'm feeling pretty good about it. Pretty good about the $5 million.
And do most of the properties we purchase have homes on them, or most of them don't?
Negative. Most of them are unimproved. At least the ones that I've seen recently, yes.
You bet. Okay. Thank you, Matt.
Of course.
Mr. Mark. Oh, excuse me. Oh, I'm sorry. My goodness. I'm really trying to go. Go ahead.
Very good job of getting the meeting done.
Go ahead, sir.
So, thank you. As I think many of you are aware, back in 2017, the district hired an environmental consultant to conduct an assessment of the impact of on-site septic systems on water quality of the lake. Along North Shore Drive. From that study, there was a few data gaps that were identified, and since that time, the city, the county, and the district staff have been working on developing a scope of work to conduct an additional round of monitoring for this winter, hopefully, that would allow us to supplement the data that was gathered back in 2017, as well as to fill some of those data gaps. With that, we also are working on an interlocal agreement that will define how the funding is shared amongst us. So that's really about it, unless there's any questions on.
Any questions?
Yeah, just what kinds of data gaps?
The largest one, I believe, and certainly city and county staff can chime in, was that we focused along the portion of North Shore Drive that is served by septic systems, with a couple of control points that were undeveloped portions of the shoreline. So the hope is to also gather some data along sewer sections of North Shore as well, so that you'll have an ability to compare apples to apples of developed areas.
Okay, it's more locational issues.
Correct. Because there is anything else that was from the data gap, but we're pretty much proposing the same analyte list.
Yeah. That was the big gap, yeah.
Any other questions?
I have a question with regards to we're looking at next year to do that. What time do we need to have approval to implement something like that this year?
So the district has $30,000 in our current budget set aside for this type of an event, and are working through next year's budget as well with you and the rest of the board. And so certainly time is of the essence, but I think we're pretty close to having the scope of work finalized, and it's a matter of moving the interlocal agreement through
the approving body. Yeah, so I'd like to hear if it looks like we are going to come together with these three groups in time, does that look feasible to be able to do that, to be able to get another contract and getting that monitoring done in the winter? Does that look okay? Are we looking optimistic
We have to do an RFP to get a consultant, but we have agreement on the scope of work. The district has $30,000 that they can spend this year. The county's money is for next year. So as long as we can start it this year and then use the county and then whatever money the district puts in for 2020.
So we're on track.
Yeah, great.
Okay. Question for you, Claire. Do we have somebody that took Robin Matthews' place yet to be the lead on our...
We do, and I don't remember her name. Do you remember her name?
Rachel?
I
thought
it was
Angela.
You're right. Yeah, you're right.
That sounds good. Yeah. That sounds good.
Yeah, I think Robin's still up there and still tutoring or mentoring this person during a transition phase. And so I don't know when we're going to start seeing her out in public. So.
Okay.
She was at the last theater.
Oh, yeah. Despite the fact that I can't remember her last name, I was involved in the hiring process, and she comes incredibly highly qualified to do the work, and I think she's going to be a really good fit for our group.
Good. What was really interesting about her, her background is she's been at Portland State, and so she knows, I don't think she's worked directly with them, but she knows the people that did the initial modeling for the TMDL back in the day. And speaks highly of them. Well, so that was a nice connection. She has some experience with that.
Good. Okay, Mark. Okay, so
he's got good news.
That was very efficient. With this last topic, we've completed all the topics we said at the beginning of the year that we were going to cover for Lake Whatcom Policy Group this year, with the exception of aquatic invasive species. So that's usually held in November. But the question is whether or not we should hold a November meeting with AIS as being the main topic, and maybe other topics may or may not be there, or just assume that will be rolled in discussion next year. There's opportunities to take that to the councils directly if there's any need for consultation, but I don't believe there's any plans for major policy changes in AIS. So the main value of that report is to get the detailed about what the season looked like and what the threats are and the trends are. But that information will also come out in the March meeting. So that, at this point, staff think that we might recommend not having the November meeting, which is the week of Thanksgiving. It was the only Monday that was available in November. However, that's a soft recommendation. If you feel
it's a firm recommendation,
if there's some March topics that are really burning March for you,
it's actually not a qualified recommendation.
Okay, so Claire is saying, okay, I'll go with Claire.
I recommend holding off until next year.
And we had Tegan and Claire answer some questions about AAS just a few weeks ago at the county meeting. So,
okay.
So next meeting, do you have a date in March?
It's usually the last week, and then we will have a policy group meeting in February once the group members are decided and the councils get reconfigured and everybody gets selected into their committees. But I would like to just quickly, if anybody has any broad topics we might want to be thinking about next year that you want to explore, and not all of you will be here, but most of you hopefully will be. So throw them out now, just so we can kind of start a rolling list.
I've got a few issues here, which I want to summarize mostly because it's probably my last meeting, and I want to let everybody know what a real privilege it's been over the last 7 years that I've been working for.
Please introduce yourself, sir.
My name's Larry Brown. I was president of the board for most of that 7 years. I'm not now, but I'm still on the board. This is the end of my term. And I'm not running again. So I just want to say sayonara. It's been, first of all, educational. And it also has been a real privilege. As a result of all of this stuff, there's a few things I want to talk about, which should probably be discussed over the next few years, because it's not going to be a fast issue. This one may be a bit of a criticism. The county took over permitting for trees, or at least took a much bigger role in permitting tree cutting. And at least from this individual's perspective, it looks like more trees have been cut than ever, and very little replanting has been done. So that's a little bit of feedback.
Are you talking about forest practices? Or?
No, I'm talking about for anybody inside of Sutton Valley who wants to build, or who wants to just cut down a tree over a certain size. They have to get a permit from the county. And builders in particular have been getting just like whatever you want, okay, cut it down. It doesn't look real good. And I think with the lack of really robust replanting, other than maybe a scattered fern here and there, that's not the same thing that is being lost. The other issue is has to do with a little bit hydrocarbon issue and in general traffic. Sun Valley has about another 500 lots, and that's going to translate into roughly 1,500 people. That'll take several years, but that's going to put a huge bit of pressure on Lake Watkin Boulevard, particularly since the only services that are really available are you can get some storage down in Alger, or you can go into Bellingham for everything else. And I would like to propose that the county consider making a real big modification to its land use planning with regard to at least Sun Valley, if not the watershed as a whole, and that is allowing more services to be located close to the fourth freaking largest community in the county. There are no doctors. There's no emergency medical care. There are very few anything else. And unless you're going to build a bigger road, we're going to need some services, or you're going to get a lot more traffic. And it's pretty stinking bad now, coming in the morning and going home in the afternoon, particularly since there's construction going on all in the Fred Meyer area. Lots and lots of apartments going up, and that's really a cutoff point. It's a choke point. In addition, if you're going to let Southern Valley build, that could be potentially, I mean, we've got people who are willing to invest now, but we can't say that they can because they have to go to the county and get permission. And I don't, the county has already told us when we said we wanted to put in private storage and then open it up to everybody in the watershed, anybody who's nearby, so they don't have to drive to Bellingham or Alger. The county said absolutely no. Only Southern Valley residents. Well, okay, that's good enough, but we have disturbed land that we would love to use, and we desperately need the income. And I'll switch a little bit on the income issue. Southern Valley right now appears to be going through a major financial retrenchment. There is every reason to believe that, contrary to most people's belief a few years ago, Southern Valley will reject a proposed budget. Now, what that will do is immediately halt contributions to capital reserves. That means capital expenditures will, if not stop next year, dramatically slow down, and probably for the next several years. There's only so much left in our accounts. We might handle some this coming year, but not much after that. We are the fourth largest community, and we have no outside source of income. Our members pay for everything. Nobody pays for our road repavement. Nobody pays us a dime for plowing. And all the water management work that has been done and will hopefully continue to be done comes out of our residents' pockets, and they're sick and tired of it. They're taking their anger out on Sutton Valley right now because that's where they have the sway. But I guarantee when the water management fee starts clicking in next year and then doubles the year after that, you will start hearing more complaints. In that regard, by the way, the Sheriff's Department could use an extra person because right now, one person covers both sides of the lake, and that's just not adequate. Because it takes a long time, as the deputy said, I will out him on this one, when seconds count, we'll be there in minutes. Because it takes a long time to get around from the north side to the south side. And if the department could have more coverage in South County, devoted to South County, that would be a really big improvement. And certainly, then the county could say, hey, we've increased our services to you. Finally, I want to talk about an issue that the county has started talking about. And you've gotten a lot of flack, and I know you will. I know you knew this when you started, and that's boats. Don't forget that there are alternatives to gasoline. There's alcohol. Not commonly used now. It's natural gas. Rarely used, but very possible. And hydrogen. Again, rare, but possible. There's still internal combustion. Obviously, the long term, you want to go to a electric. All I can say is good luck on your political pushback from everybody who's got a major investment in a motor and everybody who earns an income off of servicing those things is going to be against you for a long time. So I clearly understand. God knows, if I could wave a magic wand, everything would be electric immediately. But anyway, so I can just say we beg the county to reconsider how it allows Sudden Valley to develop. Because if Sudden Valley doesn't get some outside income, we're not going to be able to continue doing as well as we have done in the past. And I know a lot of people in the city think that Sudden Valley has been a major polluter. And I have said for the last 7 years, it isn't true. And I will stand on it. And I will point to Robin Matthews' numbers every single time the issue comes up. What goes for the future, though, I can't say. Again, thank you all. Bless you. Bless you for your work.
Thank you, Larry, for your service.
May I make a comment about the Sudden Valley issue?
Go ahead.
Our board wants to raise our monthly dues to $400.
That's BS.
All right, hold on. Wait. This is not.
It is true.
This is not.
I'm sorry. I can't handle this allowing that blatant lie.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
There is a lot more to this than your brief, Larry.
Thank you very much. Thanks for your service, Larry. Is there any other questions? Okay, meeting adjourned.
My apologies.
Sometimes we're quicker than the city.
No, we don't have any tax base.